Okay, hi. Hello, friends, and here is program 40 coming up of Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, Part 9, which is the last part in Section 1, which is the section where he is talking to disciples, he calls it Talks to Disciples, and this is a video commentary. Our segue into this section asks us to work slowly in the manner, in the matter of learning how to visualize, which is the fundamental approach to meditation as it will be taught in the New Age. So he says, therefore, well, he calls it also the first two steps in the activity of thought form building. It is with these self-created forms embodying spiritual ideas and divine purpose that the Master's work and hierarchical purpose takes shape. So, may I say, he's having us learn how to slowly begin to emulate the Masters and their methods. He says, therefore, my disciples, it is essential that you begin with deliberation, you know, a definite choice, a definite act of will, that you begin with deliberation and slowly to work in this manner. Let's see here. And to use the above information, and this is information on visualization and energy direction through visualization, to use, he says, the above information constructively and creatively. The need of the times, he says, is increasingly great, and the utmost of work and of purpose is desired. And I would just have us remember that this introductory section to Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, was written before the Second World War broke out on the physical plane. So maybe some 85, 90 years ago. And we're faced with the question that we have to address to ourselves: how much has changed? Humanity is still embroiled in these wars. And so many people, millions of people, side with the rebellious dweller on the threshold, and not with the solar angel, who, like the master, knows something of the divine plan, a great deal of the divine plan when compared to what humanity may know. But this condition of a troubled humanity cannot go on forever. The New Age is relentlessly unfolding with all kinds of new approaches to which we must learn to adhere. And the question is, shall we really cooperate and adhere accordingly, or will we be kind of dragged, kicking and screaming into the new age, a much bumpier entrance into the wonder that could and will eventually unfold during the new age. So let's study this section on visualization and energy direction very carefully and learn how to do it. So that these words of the Tibetan become more than simply words. The master can do these things easily and at will. And eventually, we also have to be able to emulate the master's proficiency and visualize and direct energy at will and with far greater ease and effectiveness than is now possible. It's the 2nd of September, we're on page 91, and we are remembering that every true disciple is being prepared for initiation, whether this is occurring imminently or a life or two ahead. So DK speaks here. He says, the goal of initiation is held out by the masters to all of their disciples, and they, i.e. the masters, and they stand ready to give the needed instruction. Now, we have to remember that DK says, we teach you, we stand by, we love you, we protect you, but essentially the battle is yours. See that you battle. That's coming from another section. And that battle is for the victory of the angel of the presence and the presence of the master and our own jewel in the lotus, our own monadic presence, over the personality which wants to go its own individualistic way, a way which promotes a kind of egotism of the lower kind, which cannot be really tolerated in the advancement of the individual and of the group. So, repeating what DK has said, the goal of initiation is held out by the masters to all their disciples. All. Note that word, all. Is held out by the masters to all their disciples, and they stand ready to give the needed instruction. As, may I say, instruction there must be if we are truly to advance together. And, let's say, to make the new group of world servers what it can become as an instrument of the masters. DK goes on and says, I would remind you at this early stage, okay, that only that which you know for yourself and experience consciously within yourself is of importance and constitutes the truth for you. Well, may I say that seems fairly obvious, but maybe it's not so obvious to everybody as it could or should be. Some of us have spent a long time learning the Tibetan words, but has the later stage supervened in our life? Have we known what he says for ourselves and experienced those things consciously within ourselves? Because then what he says will be truth for us. It won't just be, you know, something which is learned from a book. So, you know, as I've told you before, there comes that point in the arcane school work when basically what's being said is, look, you have lots of theory, now let's turn it into practice. DK goes on to say, that which may be told you by others, even by me, serves no vital purpose except to enhance or corroborate an already known truth. Or to create illusions or responsibility until it is either rejected or experienced by you in your own consciousness. Do you understand what I mean? Well, we can ponder for a moment. Do we really understand what he means? And let us note that he includes even himself, a master, because what he is saying may remain a kind of detached thought and not a living reality in our life at all. He says no vital purpose, and I suppose that word vital tells us something about the possibility of externalizing what he has taught us. It's all based on an already known truth. And if that is not taken in, if we don't have that already known truth, the result is unfortunate. Because what the master says will create illusions, mistaken thoughts, because nothing is proven within oneself. Or responsibility, because if we have been taught something, we have to learn how to execute that something. And one day, based on our own experience, it will be either rejected by us or really experienced in our own consciousness. So let me say that our obligation is to make his instruction real for ourselves within our own consciousness. Okay, going on, initiation might be defined at this point, note, always these qualifiers, maybe later as something else. So repeating, initiation might be defined at this point as the moment of crisis wherein the consciousness hovers on the very borderline of revelation. Now, I guess that's a fairly interesting definition. It is a crisis. And DK gives us these lists of crises, and they generally involve some initiation or other. Consciousness hovers on the very borderline of revelation, because is it not true that initiation always brings revelation? And may I say that for those who have not taken a particular initiation, there is a non-response because the revelation has not come. What I mean to say is the initiate may speak, but the non-initiated person will not understand because the revelation has not been conferred. Now, by revelation here, we're not meaning only the fifth initiation, which is called the revelation. Going on with TK, the demands of the soul and the suggestions of the master. Now, I have to note how interesting those nouns are, suggesting that the soul does demand, but the master only suggests. At least this is one of the major ideas or thoughts that DK has brought through to us over and over. So, repeating what he says, the demands of the soul and the suggestions of the master might be regarded as in conflict with the demands of time and space, focused in the personality or the lower man. So we have a situation, right, where the pairs of opposites are each demanding something else. The angel of the presence is demanding one thing, and the lower man demanding something counter to the demands of that angel, with, of course, the master on the side of the angel. Now, this is going to be an important section to describe, really, this dynamic, this battle that we have to fight our way through. So, you know, when DK says to us, see that you battle, he's not just talking about grabbing a rifle and running out to the scene of war. Of course, for some it may be that. But this is the major battle between the dweller, that is the unregulated personality, and the angel of the presence, aided and assisted by the master and by our own monad in extension on the higher subplane levels of the mental plane. So, what will we have? Okay, he goes on to tell us, you will have, therefore, in this situation, a tremendous pull between the pairs of opposites. I may say, it may have been some time since some of us have experienced that tremendous opposing pull And for others, they may be entering into it even at this time. And for others, it lies ahead. So he says, you will have, therefore, in this situation, and he uses the word tremendous. DK does not exaggerate, and he uses the word tremendous. You will have a tremendous pull between the pairs of opposites. The field of tension, or the focus of the effort, is to be found in the disciple standing at the midway point. Well, let's first somehow emphasize this very important idea. Yes, you will have a very difficult counterpull, we might say. Each like a behaving as if in a tug of war. Which team will win? Now, hopefully, for quite a few of us, and even all of us, we have been at this long enough to really put our emphasis on the side of the angels, or as Abraham Lincoln would or has said, our better angels. And between these two opposing forces, the Tibetan tells us the field of tension, or the focus of the effort, is to be found in the disciple standing at the midway point. And may I say that the disciple, or any rising entity, is always standing at a midway point between that which draws him on and that which inclines towards settling for a more confined, but perhaps less fearful at first, situation. And I would say that this will stand for any great entity, even a planetary logos, even a solar logos, even the being that lies, let's say, beyond our solar logos, and which we call a cosmic logos. Always the advancing entity is standing at the midway point. So that's a really important idea to keep in mind, that we are, and let's just say we are the cross because of that. In the cross, we have a pull in two different directions. Now, pretty much here we're talking vertically. And we also have a tendency, a synthetic tendency, to gather all the energies at the very very center of the cross. So then the question remains, and Master DK puts the question to us in this manner. Will he respond and react consciously to the higher pull and pass on to new and higher areas of spiritual experience? Now, as I say, that applies to any rising entity. We cannot think of this as dealing only with the little human being. And then DK enlarges the question, or will he fall back into the glamour of time and space and into the thraldom, that means imprisonment, thraldom of the personal life? Well, let me say that the planetary logos, though given an opportunity to advance, is not going to fall back into a condition of time and space as it limits us, but he does have a lower position into which he could retreat or delay his advance. Let's go on with these questions. Will he stand in a static, quiescent condition in which neither the higher trend nor the lower pull, notice trend and pull, these nouns, in which neither the higher trend nor the lower pull will affect him? What will he do? And what will we do when we are offered the chance finally to move ahead and we are the field of tension at the midway point? DK goes on to say that one or other of these conditions must distinguish him and must succeed upon an earlier and vacillating experience wherein the disciple vibrates between the higher and lower decisions. So finally, let me say, there's going to be some stabilizing for the good or for the, I can't always call it the bad, but I would call it the more restricted position. Now, this is important, what is going to be said. So one or other of these possibilities will be the kind of choice of the disciple. Do you sense in yourself that such a choice is being made? Maybe. But it's up to you to really examine your situation and to see because in a way as a disciple you're hovering on the borderland of revelation and revelation is possible to you. Now, coming in here, here's what the Master can do, or cannot do. And I've been called away for a little bit of time. I will try to take this up as soon as I get back, because it's a very busy night with a number of, one Zoomcast and one broadcast in addition to this. So we'll get back into this question of the idea that it is at this point that the Master presides. At this crisis point of choice, the Master presides. We'll come into that as soon as I'm able to return, and if I have to send you a very short program due to other obligations, it'll just have to be so. Sorry, friends, I had to attend to some other matters, so this will be a short program. But anyway, we see that there are three choices for the disciple who stands always at the midway point. And these choices are very much related to the deliberations in Libra, which always decide whether there will be forward movement, a retreat, or some kind of stasis, in which, as DK says here, neither the higher trend nor the lower pull will affect him. One or other of these three conditions must distinguish him and must succeed upon an earlier and vacillating experience wherein the disciple vibrates between the higher and the lower decisions. So I guess, may I say, what's important is that we determine how we shall proceed, since in a way we are a field of energy which is always to be found at the midway point between future possibilities and a retreat to lower confinement. You see this pretty much in the story of Libra in relationship to Scorpio or Virgo. Scorpio represents, in that case, the higher possibility. And indeed, it is the place where that group of monads called the initiates are gathered. And Virgo represents, in this case, a more material escape to a condition of confinement which existed before. And here's an important statement. It is at this point that the Master resides. So let us see in what way that may be the case. DK tells us he is able to do nothing because it is because it is the disciple's own problem. He can only endeavor to enhance the desire of the soul by the power of his directed thought. So that speaks of the limitations of the master at this point of decision. So he, the master, is able to do nothing. It would be against the law, basically, to somehow do something for the disciple in terms of making the decision for him, or making it much easier to make the decision. He does, however, contribute something of importance. His directed thought enhances the desire of the soul for a forward-moving progress. And that much he can do. And then, going on, DK tells us about the personality. The personality can also do nothing. For at this point, both the physical body and the astral vehicle are simply automatons, waiting responsively for the decision of the disciple functioning in the mental body. And let me say, we do know something about Libra connected with the third ray and with mentality. So this whole crisis of decision is being worked out in the mental body, and hopefully in the mind held steady in the light, and hopefully within some approximation of the mind as it is in Christ. So the personality also, by itself, can do nothing. So then what can happen? And DK goes on to tell us, only the disciple can act upon the mental level of consciousness at this point of endeavor. Once he does so, the die is cast. May I say what that means? Is the mold is formed, and things take shape following that point. He either moves forward towards the door of light, where the master takes his hand and the angel of the presence becomes potent and active in a way which I may not describe to you. So let me say there are still these secrets that are not given to us about the higher agencies which are functioning in case the decision is for advancement. Adike goes on and says, or he drops back temporarily into the life condition of the lower man. And I would have us note the word temporarily. DK always has the sequences of time in his mind. And of course, here wants to give some degree of hope for the future. So, what happens then if he drops back? And let us be, may I say, very vigilant about which one of these three positions or approaches we may be taking. And if he does drop back, then DK goes on to say, glamour and Maya settle down anew upon him. Meaning, may I say, the energies of the astral plane and the energies of the etheric physical plane. The first being glamorous, the second being myopic in the normal sense of the word. Or he drops back, says the Tibetan, temporarily into the life condition of the lower man. Glamour and Maya settle down anew upon him, and the dweller on the threshold inserts himself between the disciple and the light from the open door, and renews activity. Well, we hope that we do not drop back in that way. But it's really very much up to us, and the decision we make upon the mental plane, where the soul is trying to exert its influence. Now, how long this dropping back might last, well, he did say it's temporary, but sometimes people reach a high watermark for their life, and that's it. No real further progress is possible for them at that time or in that incarnation. So DK goes on here. And these are, may I say, decisive moments through which we all will pass at some time or another. These are moments which can determine the outcome and the occupation of a number of lives. I'm recalling that there was a man in the Tibetan group. He was from Australia. I think his rays were 21213, beginning with the soul ray. He made some kind of decision. Whatever that decision was not mentioned in detail, except that DK said, well, it's going to take him now 3 lives to recover from the decision that he has made. Not a very pleasant prospect, perhaps, that so much should depend, so many lives and their output, their success, their spiritual success should depend on what might otherwise look like small decisions. So DK goes on to say, the disciple either awakens suddenly to a wider grasp of reality and a deeper understanding of the plan and his part in it. This, all this, may I say, sounds quite dramatic. But maybe we must assume that's how it is, because we do trust the Tibetan that he delivers the truth to us based on his own experience and having also watched many others pass through such experiences. So, repeating what he says, the disciple either awakens suddenly to a wider grasp of reality and a deeper understanding of the plan. Note the words wider and deeper, always used, wider and deeper. But repeating here, a deeper understanding of the plan and his part in it, or the veils of earth close over his head. The vision fades, and he reverts, that's the word, he reverts into the life of an ordinary human being, probably for the period of the incarnation wherein opportunity was offered to him. Well, I would say there are a lot of people who would profit by realizing that they run the danger of reverting. They probably don't realize it and they blame other people. And they find all kinds of alibis, all kinds of excuses for why they are not going through the door. But it is their choice. That's, may I say, one thing that DK keeps on emphasizing. It's our choice, and it is our battle. But now, in contrast, well, I'm going to say here, the veils of earth close over his head, and the vision fades. So much is at stake, and we don't realize it. We're always being presented with choices. And we think, oh, just another choice. But a choice can be determining for a lifetime. And in some cases, it can be determining for even more than a lifetime, an incarnation. Now, should he, however, go forward through that door? Now, may I say that's the divine possibility. Should he, however, go forward through that door, then, according to the initiation which becomes possible, will be the revelation and its attendant consequences. In other words, according to this kind of choice, there will be revelation. Always in the case of possible initiation, there is revelation. And every revelation we're seeing here has consequences attached to them. DK is calling them attendant consequences. So going through the door, and what will it take? And what will, contrarily, something like that, cause the reversion to a more confined situation? Now, DK further says, the revelation will not be the revelation of possibilities. It is a factual experience resulting in the evocation of new powers and capacities and the recognition of new modes and fields of service. So it's not just a question of what may be possible, but it actually happens within the disciple. New powers and capacities are drawn forth, and new modes and fields of service are instituted, recognized, made real, not just possibilities. Now that's, of course, what all of us are striving for. For this we are striving. And we become an enhanced human being due to the instruction we received and obeyed according to the advice and the hints that have appeared. New powers are coming to us, and new methods of serving, of which we are now fully capable. Going on with decay, these powers are conditioned by past developments, and the presence of these capacities, plus a freedom of movement, quote, within the bounds of the hierarchy, close quote, which lie far beyond anything which he may have dreamed. So let me pause and say, yes, there is a basis. The developments of the past are feeding the new and real capacities, and instead of simply dreaming about what one can do or could do as a more integral part of hierarchy, finally one can do it. And all this lies far beyond anything which he may have dreamed. And all these become his new, or should we say, new hierarchical contacts are now possible to him. New responsibility is laid on his shoulders, and new, quote, fields of potency become available for his use in world service. Well, it would be good to study the before and after of such people. We find people like Ramana Maharshi and Vivekananda and did I say Ramakrishna? No, I didn't. We find high initiates. And our question is, well, we know something about what they are now and what they can do now and have done. But what were they like before they made the choice to move forward in service and in alignment with higher points of tension? No master, may I say, was always a master. There is a steady progression. And DK has told us that every one of the masters has gone through everything that a human being might go through in terms of the various phases which must be entered, recognized, entered, and transcended. So we have not to consider that such a great teacher and guide to humanity like the Christ was always that way. Now this would fly in the face of Christian doctrine, in some of the mystical Christianity books, Christ was always and exactly what he is now. And his ongoing development is ignored. Well, that's a very big mistake that confined religions tend to make. Because, look, you would have to admit the imperfection of every high initiate for whom you are hoping, or from whom you are hoping to see perfection. It's somehow reassuring to you and others that someone like the Christ or some very high initiate has been psychologically and spiritually perfect forever, especially the Christ, whom the scriptures tell us is the only Son of God. But the ageless wisdom puts a kind of relativity into the whole question of development. And no longer is it possible for such an one as the Christ, and he never would say so anyway, to be deemed the only Son of God. Now, we're going to in a way, enter a new section here about hints and how we develop by following hints in a different way than once we did. The master took a lot more responsibility for the disciple in those days. But this will be of interest to us, but I have so many, two more programs that I have to take care of tonight, so with Tuya, of course. That I'm just going to call it here on page 93, where he begins to discuss the guru. So this is program 40, Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, Section 1, Talks to Disciples, Part 9, the last part in this section, and This is a video commentary, and we'll be going on to number 41. So just accomplishing a little bit so far. Let's see, I think I have to be a little careful here. Because I could mess the whole thing up. Anyway, I will copy this and bring it down to this point about the guru. In other words, we're going to discuss the old way and the new way. So this has been program 40. And we'll start with program 41 when that becomes possible. Which, though I wish it were possible tonight, probably is not possible. And this will be, program 40 has gone from 91 to 93. In its pagination, and we will begin with 93. Program 41. If I can just, there it is. Well, what have we looked at here? The need for the factual experiences of the disciple. No longer to be veiled by glamours and illusions. This is an awakening. And the light shining through the door of initiation can belong to the earnest, upwardly aspiring disciple. And we choices lie before us, and it would be wise to consider that even now we are faced with these choices. At any time we are faced with these choices. What will they be? We're always at this midway point. And if we look at ourselves as a field of energy at the midway point, we can go on to further experience with the angel of the presence, or we can, those words, you know, fall back. I suppose everyone has had the experience of falling back somewhere along this thorny path of occultism. And hence it is that the biblical phrase was given, he who puts his hand to the plow and turns back is not worthy to enter the kingdom of heaven. Okay, well, just a few pages at a time, friends. That's all we're doing, and we will reach, I hope, page 102. And then we can see what else we might do. Maybe our work will be in Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2. But meanwhile, we're getting a very strong sense of how to progress, how not to progress, and how to remain simply in a remain in a static, vacillating condition in which the die is not yet cast, and the mold of what we will do is not yet affirmed. So obviously, Master DK wants us to make such a decision as will take us forward, so that all these things become possible, that new responsibility is laid upon our shoulders, and that new fields of potency become available for our use in world service. What is being offered to us is so stupendous, so much in line with having an entirely different set of spiritual values, that we would be foolish, would we not, to deny the gift and just superficially read over a few things that Master DK has said. I think we should ponder on the teacher and the gift. And see then how generous has been the endowment of absolutely indispensable information that we need to advance into higher points of tension. Okay, friends, that's it. Tuya and I wish you love and many blessings, and the whole ever sort of present team, BL and Joe and Michael Stacy and Mikhail Crow and others who join us now and then, but especially at conference time, we all wish you the very best. Expansion and deepening. Expansion and deepening. Now, I have to go on to the next program, Identify as Being. So, many blessings, and we'll be in touch with you. Well, at the earliest possibility, and here I'm just going to write XX because I don't know when I'll be able to resume, but we have now less than 10 pages in this section of the book, Talks to Disciples. Okay. See you soon then.